Hello and welcome back to Millennial 8. This is the final stream for tonight, and it is with Gifts from Gifts Ungiven, which is a YouTube channel and Odyssey channel. I've linked the Odyssey channel below. I don't like to link YouTube channels unless it's strictly necessary, because I want to encourage people to get over to Odyssey, but I will add it after the show. So, Gifts, welcome to Millennial.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, would you like to introduce people to yourself and your channel? I think your material would probably strike people immediately as quite avant-garde, quite arty. I never like that word, but you know, people use it. But there is substance to it for sure. I mean, it's not just some weird stuff.
Yeah.
So you go for it and introduce yourself and your channel to people.
Yeah, so I guess you could call me a content creator. I came from art school, and when I started my channel, there were so many bans that happened all across like the dissident right, and so I just decided it's probably not a good idea to talk about things directly and try to find a different approach. And since I have an art school background, I kind of decided, you know, an avant-garde approach would be, you know, pretty good one, because you can get away with a lot. So that's what my channel really, you know, aims to do, is to disseminate information in a more cryptic way, kind of, you know, planting the seed in the head of the listener kind of thing, instead of directly telling them, because you know, sometimes that just doesn't work, especially when you're dealing with more intense topics. But yeah, I think it was just a way to evade censorship. So, you know, I have a character on the show that I usually spar with. And sometimes I do some commentary type stuff if I feel like I can't address the topic in you know, a more artsy kind of way. But yeah, I think in general, what I'm aiming to do is evade censorship. And also there is kind of a story or you know, I guess a hidden truth that I like to reveal to the audience slowly over time. So I guess, you know, I like to keep that mysterious, so I can't really go into that. But yeah, so. Oh.
All right. Sorry, I'm just okay. Locating a link for adding to the description. I think that. Well, when exactly did you start your YouTube channel? Because I know it was before I got banned, but it was, when was it?
Yeah, I'm thinking it was late 2018, maybe. I think it was late 2018, 2019.
Right, okay.
And then you did get banned shortly after that. So many people got banned. It was really sad.
It must have been quite strange for you to sort of arrive there and suddenly to realize that there was a censorship regime in action.
Yep.
And a lot of people got zapped. I mean, obviously, when I started, it was 2014, and it was quite a different environment then.
Definitely.
It's alarming how much YouTube is. And I don't want to go on and on about this because everyone's heard it before, but it is alarming how much YouTube has changed under the reign of Susan Wojcicki.
Yes.
And, you know, to hear her getting awarded some free speech medal is just incredible.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, insane. She did.
That's crazy.
somehow that's not deemed insane. I think that a lot of the people who've come laterally, more recently, I'll say, have had to work out how to do certain things, how to address certain fields in a fairly cryptic way, but or else they do things in like 4-hour streams so that no one is going to watch.
That's a good strategy.
That's another way of getting around it. There's a strange thing. Again, when I was doing it, it does feel like a sort of different life now, a different era. When I was doing it, you could just pretty much say anything, which I think is unimaginable now. I mean, even on Odyssey, I'm not that.
You have to be really careful.
Yeah. It's a strange life. So, what would you say are the topics of interest in your work, the relevant things in your work?
Well, usually it is semi-political, but I think the main topic is culture and kind of breaking that down and, you know, just some ridiculous thing like a show like Euphoria or just anything that they kind of push at us. You know, my channel kind of tries to deal with, but also I'd say there is like a hidden history kind of element that I'm slowly kind of merging into the channel. That's kind of always been there, but yeah, I'd say it would be culture, spiritual warfare in general, just, you know, that topic. And then also there is a tinge of a little bit of history, hidden history in there. Stuff you can't talk about.
A way to address this that I think is quite interesting is that it's deconstruction of culture, which is something that has been done by progressives, communists, frankly, a lot of them, and sometimes explicitly communists, over the last 100 years or so. And it's interesting because they are often outraged when people from a different, I'm not even going to say from the right or from the far right, but I mean, I don't like thinking of myself as far right. It just doesn't, it seems ridiculous. I don't, but anyway, whatever. When leftists tend to really object when someone from the right does what they've been doing. And it even confuses them because they think that there is no body of thought on the right. There is no, except hatred and, you know, anger and stupidity and resentment and all, but no actual intellectual activity. So it doesn't make sense to them when the right even critique culture, let alone when the right, as I said, do what they've been doing and deconstruct ideas and culture. Do you ever get people showing up on your channel who are outraged?
Sometimes. There are people, if I post, I used to do this, I don't do this as much anymore. I would go to Reddit where I would post, you know, because a part of what I was trying to do was, you know, kind of, like I said, slip the idea into the head of the viewer, you know, kind of being very subtle. And I thought if I posted over there that maybe I could kind of convince them, you know, using an artsy sort of approach. And it did kind of work because I do get people that are kind of on the fence. But yes, I do get lefty people who come over from Reddit and they can see what I'm doing and they don't like it. And they do kind of have a problem. Somebody said something like, I really like this channel and I like the aesthetics, but I don't like what she's saying. They loved it. They loved the channel, but they felt like it was such a disservice that I was, you know, right wing. So, and I will agree with you that the deconstructionist kind of thing that the left constantly does and the communists, the people from the Frankfurt School and Bauhaus introduced, that's definitely something that they can do, but we can't do. So, yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I once did a speech about with the film Withnail and I. I don't know if you're familiar with that film. It's a British film. Withnail and I. No, it doesn't ring a bell. Well, I once gave a speech about this, and it was talking about culture, well, all sorts of things, politics and all this. And some guy commented under the video, put it up as a video. Some guy commented and said, he said something like, you are not an intellectual. You don't have the right to do this. It's really amazing. He just, because to him, an intellectual is someone who is a leftist. And there is no, it's it's tautologically impossible for there to be someone else, someone from a different perspective. And I think this is to do with the sheer dominance of the left in the culture. So they've never come into contact with other ideas. And so when they do, they assume that those ideas must be nonsense, must be something that's just there to confuse them. I once heard about a guy on the right who got into an argument with some Antifa who were trying to shut down an event. And he got into a debate with this Antifa guy and was sort of questioning his assumptions. And the Antifa guy said, "Why are you doing this? You're just trying to confuse me." I think the guy only got away with it because he's an old man. He's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would simply have been violence, I guess. but I've always thought that's a very interesting thing. It's like they have a bunch of assumptions that they absolutely don't want to question. And I don't know if it was always like this, if this is what NPCs are like and they've always been with us. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think there is a certain religious fervor to the left. I think that most people are naturally apolitical and probably always were. And it's not quite normal for people to be so as fervently political as they are today. And I think a lot of it is that it's filling a hole in their lives, actually. Especially with us. And, you could say the same might be true of us. But I don't really think so. I think, at least in a different way, we are seeing genuine problems with society. They are exacerbating those problems in society. And they are doing, we are actually genuinely questioning things. They are simply parroting what they've heard from the mainstream media again and again and again.
Yeah, I agree with that. An NPC is somebody that can't think for themselves. That's the idea. And I, if you're on the right, you're being oppressed for thinking for yourself. You get rewarded as an NPC, to think for yourself and not to think for yourself. I see what you're saying, and it's I do think it's a ridiculous thing.
To get back to your videos, they seem to feature a computer that I vaguely remember from I remember when my high school was getting rid of a bunch of them. They hadn't been used for years, and they're putting them in a skip, which I thought was a rather shame because it is an iconic design. It's the Apple Classic II, I think from the mid-80s. And it's I'll put it up on screen so that people know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a commercial by Ridley Scott, the guy who directed Blade Runner, and he actually did the commercial for this computer. I just thought it would be the most fitting computer to use for the show.
Why was that?
Because it has it came out in 1984. And that's, I don't know, it just has it's a vaporwave kind of thing. It's used in vaporwave aesthetic. But I think it has sort of a creepy feel to it. And it's, 1984 thing, just kind of a feeling.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. There is something scary about high technology and modern, like cutting edge technology, but there's also something scary about technology that's a bit out of date, because there's a sense of it being a bit primitive. What the hell's it going to do to me? I think, and I think that's something that you play on in your videos, where it's someone coming into contact with something that they can't, that they're baffled by. Would you like to talk about that?
And it's also going back to the NPC thing, the computer is kind of a representation of how people are programmed. And that's constantly what's happening, between the computer and my character is my character kind of breaking from the matrix, if you will, and realizing that, okay, I'm not down to get programmed right now. But yeah, with regards to that element, that creepy element between my character and the computer, I think it's just a, it is kind of a transhumanist thing. The dynamic between the computer and myself, I'm an organic being and you have this computer, this lifeless thing that's ordering me around or, you know, kind of trying to tell me how to live my life as a human. And, yeah, it just makes sense with the powers that be, because it does feel very inhuman. You know, when you watch the media and you're being told all of these ridiculous things and then they're telling you to put a computer chip in your head and stuff like that. it is very inhuman, and I think it's designed that way, you know, for a reason. So,
well, what I noticed with that recently, in recent years, with the smartphone, with Ukraine and with COVID, is that, and I'm guessing this is going to just continue. It's inevitably going to continue. They've worked out a way to really make things very simple for people. So it's it's constant messages, very stark. And I mean, it's, you know, that's the cliche about, you know, the film They Live. Do you know that film? It's the one with all the propaganda posters. Yeah.
Yes.
You're kind of living like that now, where it's technology one way or another is constantly either telling you about something, you know, the current thing, or it's alluding to it. It's keeping the current thing in your awareness, in your consciousness. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. This is obviously a very weird and unnatural way for us to be living. I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't know necessarily how unhealthy it is, but it's certainly in the hands of people who don't mean us well. And so, you know, it's sort of innately unhealthy for that reason. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. Well, what exactly is the question? Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that the computer, modern technology, is being used to condition people all the time.
Yeah.
And it's something you can never really escape from.
I guess I would say that I find it to be useful. I think that's why I'm kind of struggling to see the problem with it. It is a problem, especially if you're on Twitter all the time. But I guess I've never really had that issue. I think I'm able to use technology when I need to and separate myself and like go into nature and stuff. So, but I do think for most people, it is a really big problem, and it's definitely used as a device to control, you know, how people think. And I don't know if it's worse than what we had before, because, you know, if you go really far back, we didn't have much of anything. You had like sculptures, and, you know, and then you had paintings, which were informing how we feel and all sorts of art. But then we eventually evolved up to television, and that was bad. And that, I mean, everybody had a television in their home, but, you know, I don't know if it's worse now that we have you know, smartphones and Twitter and all that stuff that can keep us in the state that they want us in or not. Because there's a lot of freedom too. It's kind of like we get to talk right now, and this wouldn't have been something we would have been able to have done.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not against, I want to emphasize, I'm not against technology, and I use technology all the time. I do programming. I'm constantly on Telegram, and I make my living from this. So clearly, it's useful to me, and I'm not going to decry it. Everyone should get off the internet, but there is the other side of it. I mean, you know, I can remember when the internet was the Wild West, and you really went free.
The best.
I mean, yeah, and up until about 10 years ago, really,
and, it's definitely gotten more constrained. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, in the last 5 years, it's incredible how much has happened. That I think that really started with the Trump election, Brexit was a sort of warning for them. You know, you're going to have to start doing something. And then the Trump election confirmed it, and they went nuts. So yeah, it's something that is a very double-edged sword.
It is, yeah.
And I wish that we could arrive at a way to deal with it, to use it, that was benign. Because I don't think we'll get rid of it. I mean, I don't think there will be a sort of complete return to monk situation. But in the interim, we're left with this thing that is, as I say, sort of poisoning us.
Yeah, definitely. And with the control that they have over AI, they're getting better and better at that. So they can, well, kids especially, you know, I would never give, you know, when I have kids one day, I wouldn't give them a phone. That's the worst, because, you know, obviously we know the people you want to target are the children. If you want to inspire them to become something, you know, politically speaking or whatever. That's pretty scary. And Twitch is super egregious. You know, Pokimane and, you know, all of those people who have a very young audience. You know, it's very, it used to be very free over there too, you know, because Destiny was on Twitch, but he's been kicked off. So yeah, it definitely has gotten worse, but I feel like we always have a way of creating new technology or something that ends up allowing us to, you know, evade.
Well, yeah, there was a saying at one point, I can't remember the exact phrasing now, but it was something like the internet perceives censorship as a problem and roots around it, so that it just circumvents censorship. And that was said a long time ago. I mean, I remember that, hearing that in, like, I don't know, the early 2000s, before censorship really became a thing. But I think it was people, sort of futurologists, marveling at this new technology, thinking, and it did seem at that time that censorship would basically be impossible to censor the internet. And that was the whole idea for a while, which seems amazing now. But I think what happened was that people got kettled into or attracted to single massive websites like Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Google, which could then be policed. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, how many people even have their own website nowadays? They'll have a page on one of those websites, or Instagram or whatever. So then it's not free.
But well, fair enough. And who would really? Okay, Spotify as an example. If you're a musician, there's no way that your album is going to get heard, listened to, if you're not on Spotify. So they, without question, definitely do have a monopoly. But I just feel like over time, we're in a better position than we are now. You know, you know, with the TV era, you know, you had to go through so many filters just to do what we're doing. Like, this wouldn't even have been possible. But, you know, yes, they're constricting the avenues for people like us to talk on the internet. That being said, I think it's incredible that we can even have a conversation at all, because eventually I feel like those things kind of trickle into the normiverse. Like, the NPCs kind of get, because it can become cool over time. I think it's something that happens very slowly. We'll always kind of be in the underground. But I think naturally the way the cycle goes usually is these things will eventually, you know, surface a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. There is also the question of being in the, as you say, the underground. You went to art school. I went to art school. I've always, well, certainly in my 30s, and I've always had a sort of cautious relationship to the mainstream. Most people are going to be mainstream. you are not. And so you have to work out how to feel about that. Does that mean that does that mean that I'm better? Does it mean that I'm cool? Does it mean anything? Does it mean anything at all?
It could mean that you're cool. Yeah. It could also mean that we're just a bunch of autistic losers.
That could be I really think some people would say that. But it's an interesting question because, again, with the leftist conception of the world, it's cool to be an outsider. We should listen to the outsider. That's what they always said. You know, when I was growing up, it was always this idea of, oh, he's a bit different. He's an outsider. He's not average. But then I feel that that's gone away now.
I know why. Well, the reason, because I've thought about that a lot. I think the reason why that's disappeared is because it was very advantageous when, you know, our people, you know, were in control for them to turn being rebellious and anti, you know, white or anti government or whatever to make that a cool thing. But obviously now that they have the power, they don't want that. Now they want things to be, you know, more conservative, weirdly enough. And I think it'll become more and more like that as time goes on. Because they have to solidify their power. So that rebelliousness, it is ridiculous that the people on the left still, they think because they have tattoos or whatever, and they will try to claim the art scene in general as being theirs, because, you know, the only way you could be an artist is if you're degenerate and punk rock or something like that. So yeah, it is kind of weird, the position that we're in, because, you know, I think about that too. You know, technically we're cool by their standards, but they're not acknowledging us as such. But yeah, I think the intended purpose, what I'm saying, of the punk rocker kind of rebellious thing in our culture, I really do think that that was only to serve, you know, the destruction of everything. It's not actually cool to hate your parents, to not like your, you know, the culture and the civilization that your ancestors built. There's nothing cool about that. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that.
Yeah, and so now they, as you say, they've got a consensus, they've got a norm, a new norm, and so anything that contradicts that is not cool. It's evil or stupid. Or uneducated or something.
Yes.
I mean, and this leads to the whole thing about how much of a bizarre, how strange it is that the leftist thinks he's a rebel while he espouses slogans and ideas that are believed in by all of the powerful entities in society. And I don't know how they reconcile that in their heads. I think the way they must do it is to say, well, there's still capitalism. Therefore, my ideas are not fashionable. They are not in vogue, because otherwise we would all be living in a commune or something. Therefore, I'm still an outsider, and I think that's crucial to their self image, that they see, they have to see themselves as outsiders and underdogs and rebels and all that.
They do, yeah.
No matter how conformist they actually are, it's quite remarkable.
Well, and their whole ideology would kind of fall apart, wouldn't it? Because they're not trying to conserve anything, and they don't care about what their ancestors built. So they could never be, you know, more conservative. So they really do need to stick to that idea that they are a rebel. That's definitely imbued. That's imbued into their identity. I guess it's a meta narrative or something. Like it's been crafted by the media and by Hollywood and by art schools and whatnot. So that's going to stick around for a while, unfortunately.
I guess I should ask you about your experience of art schools now that you've mentioned it. What was that like, and when was it as well?
It was awful. That was quite a while ago now, probably, let's see, So it would have been 2010, I think. And yeah, I think that's when I started going to, yeah, that's when I started going to college. But anyhow, I grew up in a small town, and I basically had nothing to do. So I was a painter. I would just paint, and I got really good at it. And I had, my mom bought me all of these classical art painting books, you know, just with a bunch of paintings. And I wanted to go to school to do classical painting, you know, like oil painting. And my, you know, my mom, I was actually going to go to an Italian school for art, for painting and for sculpting, but that didn't pan out. My mom was scared for me to go all the way across, you know, the world to do that. So I ended up going to school locally, and I knew it was going to be bad. And you know, I was trying to convince her to let me go to RISD somewhere in the States, maybe Cal Arts, something like that. But she's like, no, you're just going to have to go to the local art school. And it was, it definitely, like, what ended up becoming the things that, you know, people started making fun of during, like, Gamergate. Like, that was already happening back then, like, back in 2010 or whatever. I guess that's not too far from Gamergate, but that, anyhow.
Well, it's about 4 or 5 years before.
Yeah.
But the reason I asked when you went to art school is, to compare it with my own experience, I went from 2000 to 2004. So, but of course, it's a different country and all that, but I am interested in how these things evolve. Because when I was there, it really, it was sort of soft Marxism, but there was nothing really explicit. And definitely you weren't expected to, you know, pledge allegiance to the rainbow flag or
it wasn't state, like that.
You know, declare that you were pro equality or anything like that. So
there were hints of it. There were hints of it. It's definitely gotten worse from what I've heard from people. Yeah, it's definitely gotten worse. But at the time, you could see that it was starting to happen. And as somebody who had a more classical background, I got to art school and I was demoralized. And I actually ended up dropping out because, yeah, maybe we weren't all the way there with the rainbow flags and stuff. But there was like a hint of it. And something that I realized when I went to art school, whether I wanted to continue painting or be a musician or whatever it was that I wanted to do, if you want to have a show, you got to have like your artist persona. But as like a white person, unless like as a woman, I wanted to be a feminist, there was no way that I was going to be able to have the eyes on me. It was very much, I could tell at that point that I needed to have like a feminist flair or something, or that you needed to have some sort of identity, like underdog status, you know, in the lefty reign. So that was really alarming. So I don't know if you noticed that, but that was something that I noticed. And I realized, well, I don't fit any of those categories. So I'm not a part of the, they're not going to like my art. And they don't appreciate skill. That was definitely a thing that, you know, you can do video art, like really silly stuff, or banana tape to, you know, a canvas or something like that. And maybe you'll get some attention. But yeah, if you want to come here and like do a painting that's technically, you know, you're skilled. So there was nothing for me there. So I don't know, what did you go to art school for? Like, what were you pursuing?
Well, I could never paint, and I'd never really tried sculpture. So it wasn't for either of those. It was for film and video work and graphics work. And I probably should have gone to film school instead, but I didn't. I can't remember now what happened at school, at high school. They either didn't even mention film school to me, or they said, don't even bother applying. I can't. Oh. I honestly can't remember now which of those is the truth. It's funny how that happens. But I can't. It's too vague now. I'd have to really think about it, sort of dig deep. But either way, I didn't apply for film school. Maybe I thought myself that I wouldn't stand a chance because there is only, as far as I know, there's only one film school in Britain. So it would be extremely selective.
You'd either have way, to have come to the United States.
Probably. Yeah. And that wouldn't even have occurred to me as a possibility back then because there was less travel. I mean, it wasn't quite like it is now. In 2000, there were exchange students. There were, but it wouldn't have occurred to me to do that. Mm-hmm. So film school just didn't, for whatever reason, I didn't apply for that. And I kind of wanted to go to art college because it seemed like I'd meet interesting people there. I'd maybe fit in there. It would be, other outsiders and eccentrics and weirdos. Now, I was curious about that.
Same.
Yeah, of course, it's part of it. It's like, okay, I've lived all my life among ordinary people, and I want to meet weirdos. I don't like saying weirdos in a disparaging way because at the time it seemed exciting. But what I found was, I went to two art colleges, and one of them, it was almost entirely British people, kids, students. There were some quite interesting characters there. But then at the second one I went to in London, that was much more, I don't know, it's difficult to say this. It was sort of like a 50-50 mix between people who were artists as such and should be artists, and you could tell that they had that mentality, they had that nature. And the other 50 being a mix of people who just had gone to this because they couldn't think of anything else to do. And then the charlatans, the people who really didn't give a toss about art, but they knew that it was a way to make money. And they were and they were approaching it in that way, as what's fashionable? What do I need to do in order to sell something, basically?
Mm.
It sounds like a caricature, and I guess it is. But often in real life, people kind of are caricatures.
Yeah, they are.
That's how it was. And those were the people who, as far as I know, proceeded to make a living from it. They actually succeeded in the artwork.
Oh yeah, I noticed those.
The actual artists, the actual artists fell by the wayside.
Yeah. Oh yeah. To be an artist and have a vision, and it's something that you really believe in, it's very rare that someone actually gets to, pursue that, whether it be in film or any other medium, though obviously some are easier than others. But the people who are going to do, I don't know if you're familiar with Kehinde Wildly. I think that's how you say his name. He's a black artist.
I've heard the name, but I can't.
You have to have some sort of like angle, and you have to market yourself. And that's what he did. He doesn't even paint his own paintings. But they're oil paintings of what would be like Napoleon, like a classical painting of Napoleon on a horse. But then there's like a black rapper on the horse instead. And it's supposed to be kind of a play on European painting.
This is just so shitty.
It is, the marketing thing that they do. Like what you're saying is that you find some like way to market yourself, and then that's what gets popular, that's what they want. It's sad. Yeah.
It's shitty for two reasons. The first is that the obvious anti-white thing is just so silly and tedious and destructive. But the second reason it's hideous is that it's not, it's using art as propaganda, as sort of crass, just political messaging. But the third way that it's shitty is that he's not even making the thing himself. So presumably he gets someone who actually can do oil painting, someone who actually has honed that skill. He comes up with the idea, and then the other person paints it. And, you know, I did know people like this who, at art college, who would get actual skilled craftsmen or painters or whatever to create the thing.
That's
the
thing.
They would come up with the idea, you know, they would come up with the clever idea, but they had no actual talent or skill. They couldn't do anything. So they would need, and you know, I understand that you might say, well, a film director can't operate the camera. He doesn't know how to do X, Y, and Z. He relies on other people. So what's wrong with an artist doing that? And then people will say, well, about Michelangelo having assistants who did work. But it's really not the same thing. We're talking about complete charlatans. And in the case of an artist, you know, all right, I'll make an exception for Michelangelo. But otherwise, you should, he did have talent. He did have skill. There's no question of it. So the artists we're talking about are just, they go into it straight away. As charlatans, they go into not ever intending to develop skills.
Well, and Michelangelo was doing, like, he did, you know, the Sistine Chapel ceiling. Like, you need help with that. That's an enormous undertaking. I think it took 7 years to paint. And then there's also, you know, the sculptures and stuff that he did, which I think he did get assistance with. But that's a little different, you know.
Yeah, if we were talking about Michelangelo's in this day and age, I would be much more forgiving. Right? We're talking about Philistine.
Well, yeah, and it's a thing. So, like, Damien Hirst, I think, is, it started with the found objects. So that would have been more of Marcel Duchamp, like the urinal, the famous retarded urinal. Basically, you know, to understand what's happening there, and then you have Damien Hirst who was continuing that whole thing, where it's almost like there's like the director of like the art, so he has like, you know, a skull encrusted with like, you know,
diamonds.
It's ridiculous, by someone else. That whole thing comes from Marcel Duchamp, and basically what's happened is that art has been broken down. In like Western ideals, traditional art has been completely broken down in every possible way, that it becomes more about the idea than it does the skill. And the skill was an important component of being, a European or, you know, Western, whatever, artist. But now it's about the words and how we talk about the artwork and having a plaque that shows, you know, to write up on what the art piece is about. We've fallen pretty far. But the reason why it's happened is because, they intentionally want to break down every aspect of traditional art, you know, Western ideals and whatnot.
Absolutely. What would you say, and obviously this is a completely off the cuff question, what would you say is the purpose of art? What is art?
I would say the purpose of art would be to extract things from the ether, I guess would be, you know, a good way to put it, and take things that are formless and give them form. Because there are, you know, mythologies or things that can't really be talked about in an intellectual fashion with words, and they need expression through a more artistic manner, which gives you a transcendental experience, and that's definitely something that's been completely lost, and we've kind of we're using art in a more utilitarian manner, which is really sad. You know, we don't really have a culture. We have, you know, a bunch of advertisements in our faces, and then political art, which basically, he's as utilitarian as it gets because it's, you know, favoring a particular group of people or an idea to basically sell something. So I would say real art would be tapping into that transcendental experience and pulling something from the ether, something that doesn't have form, and giving it form. And so I guess, you know, a good example would be Thus Spoke Zarathustra by Nietzsche. You know, that's a pretty famous one. You know, he obviously could write very eloquently, but, you know, and he was, you know, able to do it very well. He was able to communicate very efficiently in an intellectual manner, but there was a point at which he couldn't really, he had to be very expressive in order to describe something. So I hope that's a good, I know that's the way I like to look at it.
Yeah, I think it's partly about intellectual ideas, but it's also about conveying them in a way that is subliminal, that is not intellectual, and that is probably beautiful in some way.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Beauty is a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's a dark beauty, even if it's a distillate, I'm thinking of a Goya, something.
Right.
You know, it's not something you would say is necessarily, oh, that, what a lovely image that is.
Well, that's tragic.
And yes, it is in a way, you know.
So that's beautiful. Really, yeah.
You know. Yeah, I mean, tragedy would be the, in storytelling equivalent, it's still a story, and it's still moving, and it's still engaging and interesting.
Well, nobody likes kitsch, you know, nobody likes, people want to avoid kitsch, which is, you know, like a Hallmark card or something like that. You know, that's not what beauty is. Beauty is a lot more complex, and usually, yeah, you know, I like haunting beauty. I think that's like where there's danger and then beauty kind of mixed together. I think that's really cool. But honestly, I think a lot of the best paintings have that element where there's sort of like a little bit of danger, you know, added to the mix, because if it's too flowery and pink and pretty, then you end up with something like Rococo, which is just like, nobody really likes that.
yeah, saccharine. Yeah, I agree. I remember I once saw a Christmas film, and I think it was what Americans, I think it's something that's much more well known in America, that these Hallmark Christmas films. I think was one of those. It was definitely off that ilk, and it was this sickly sweet thing where this woman moves to a new town, and every single person she meets in this town is so nice. There's absolutely, everyone is so nice and friendly and helpful and, you know, all this. And then she falls in love with this guy, and then it turns out that the guy's father is actually Santa. absolute garbage. And the thing is, I don't think even a child would like it. That's the thing.
Kitsch.
I mean, you could say, yeah, it's just pure kitsch. It's pure nonsense, and it feels insincere. That's the thing. This is something I've never actually talked about. This experience of seeing this film on TV 10 years ago.
I've seen plenty of those.
Traumatized.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I saw a bunch of those, and they're really lame. Nobody likes those. And any adult that's watching them, I don't even know. Like, just some NPC. I don't even know.
I'm guessing it's sort of like retired women watching it at home. And it's just something to watch. It's just something on. I can't think why anyone else would watch it. But the reason I bring that up is I think it's the equivalent in film and drama of what we're talking about in art, where the thing is just a sort of joke. And it feels insincere. It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like somebody actually cared when they made this.
Well,
somebody was actually trying to convey something when they made this.
Well, and have you noticed that it usually, well, white people are allowed to have kitsch. They don't have a problem with that. We can have kitsch, very insincere, very fake emotion. But anything, you know, serious and with a lot of emotion and, you know, something tragic, that is reserved for a minority or, you know, a particular group of people that controls the world or something like that. And, you know, I do find it interesting that, that kitsch is something that, you know, it's, nobody likes it, but like, that's basically the only place that white people can go, you know? And of course in the art world, you wouldn't want to commit kitsch. So if you're a white artist, you have to, be like a Jeff Koons, which is, you know, it's like meta kitsch. So it's kitsch, but it's, we're making fun of it. So you can't say that it's kitsch because I can't have tragedy in my work or anything serious.
Or sincere.
Yeah. So it, the only avenue is either you can be kitsch, so a Thomas Kinkade painting, or you can do meta kitsch, which is awful. Who wants to do that?
Absolutely. And I think this is another way to characterize this would be, a flight from sincerity, so that everything you do is basically, you're playing a game, you're playing the game, and playing a role. You as this creator are actually just wasting everyone's time. And that's kind of the thing you do. And I think this is just terrible. You know, it's a complete betrayal of what art should be. And like so many other things in our society, the tragedy is not that the thing is bad, but that there's a whole system in place to keep it bad, to keep it this way, and to make it even worse. And that's definitely what I think is so bad about the modern world, that it's not just sickly, it's deliberately and systematically sickly. I mean, it's horrible.
Without question. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not sure what else to ask about your experience of art school. Is there anything else that you would want to say about that? Do you think that people should go to art school, or does it depend on the art school itself? Are there good ones? What would you say about that?
I would say the only, it depends on what you're doing. But in general, I would advise not going to art school. If you were inclined towards classical, you know, European aesthetics, and you wanted to pursue that route, you know, probably do what I was planning on doing, which was going to one of the Italian schools of art. Those are great because they'll actually teach you how to sculpt and paint, like legitimately within the tradition. So that's great. But if you're not interested in that, I think doing what we're doing, producing content online, just being on YouTube or on Instagram, even in the artsy section, it's not so bad. But just putting your art online is way better than going to art school. And honestly, anything that you can learn in art school, you can learn by watching a tutorial, you know, unless it's the ceramics department or something, you know, or sculpting, then you actually have to have like a kiln and stuff like that. And you have to be in person and be taught. But yeah, just put it online. Honestly, like there's no reason to go through an art school. You'll just get indoctrinated or you'll have a bad time if you're base. not a good time.
Yeah. I think that the only thing that, well, you know, I wish they did teach skills at art college. I wish they did care about this stuff. I wish they did have a bit of art history involved in it. I think that's that's very relevant and important, and yet it was never there in my art school. But the other thing I think they could teach is networking abilities, networking skills, how to open a conversation, how to negotiate a deal, that kind of stuff, because that's stuff that does not come naturally to a lot of people, and especially the types of people who become artists. They tend to be introverts and whatever. It would be something that actually would be very useful, but again, they never did that. So it was a kind of self-selecting thing where the only people who would be good at that at the end of the degree would be the people who were already good at it and who didn't need to learn any of that stuff. Yeah, so sure. It's rather annoying. But as I say, that's something that I think would be worth going to art college if they taught that. They don't, so that disqualifies that reason for going to art college. I don't really know why. I'm trying to think of a reason why someone should go to art college now.
And there just really isn't. It's not beneficial at all, I'm telling you. How long did you go for?
How long? I was at the first one for 1 year, and then the second one for 3 years.
Okay, and then you got a degree and everything.
Yeah.
Out like I did. Yeah, so you went through the whole process.
I just before you say that, I don't think people quite understand that you can actually graduate from art college. Because people always say, even about me, they say, oh, you're an art school dropout. I think one of the newspapers that wrote about me said that it was an art school dropout, and people have repeated that.
Oh, they have.
I don't know why, because I do actually have a degree. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I do actually have a degree from art school. So there we are. But anyway, I interrupted.
Well, that's good. No, I was just asking. But I am a college dropout, and I think it is kind of cool, to be honest. But it's fine that you have a degree too, because you went all the way.
I did. I mean, I was disappointed in the end that I didn't get a first class. I got an upper second class because I put so much work into the two things. It was a thesis, which I'm going to do a reading. I'm going to read it, the whole thing, the whole document at some point on the channel. It was a thesis and a film that I made. And I put so much work into both of them. And I was very disappointed when I didn't get first. Because I thought that, I don't know if I ever actually was an artist. You know, I don't know if I had that mentality quite, because I'm a bit too analytical. I'm not sure. It's one of those... matter in the end.
So you wanted to go, you wanted to be a filmmaker? Or like that would have been like your dream?
Yeah. I always thought I want to be a film director. Yeah.
You wouldn't have liked it. I've listened to Tarantino talk about it, and it's crazy because you have to, he says the hardest part of directing is managing people. It's not actually like, you know, doing the film. It's dealing with other people. And yeah, it's pretty cutthroat, but it's not an environment that's very, you basically have to be making propaganda, you know, to be making a film or you have to make some dumb normie film like Transformers or something like that. And you wouldn't have wanted to have done that.
And that's what I tell myself. You know, I tell myself it's just as well you didn't get into the media, because by now you would hate it. You would absolutely hate the life. I mean, I would have more money. That would be nice. But, and you know, stability and all that. But I would be spending every day making poison. So yeah. You know, I have to believe that, well, okay, it's probably better that you didn't.
No, it is a lot better. Yeah. And I have the same, same thought. Sometimes I, or not so much anymore, but I did think in the past, well, maybe I made a mistake by, you know, not going to art school. And you know, you have to be doing what they want. You don't really have creative freedom. It's not even worth it. So beside the money aspect, I agree with you. Art school is definitely, or not art school, but pursuing that path and becoming an artist or a director. They're not looking for people like us. You know, what we want to express is not what they're interested in.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, TV drama, for example. I especially like TV drama. And, it's just all dreadful now. It's absolutely awful. I mean, it's not just that it's low quality or whatever, or incompetent. It's quite the opposite. It's very competent at being, again, nihilistic and deconstructivist. So I have to think I wouldn't enjoy that. I mean, I'm sure there are aspects of it that I would enjoy, but the overall thing would, I think it would be draining and demoralizing. There's something else I was going to pick up on. But art school, there's no point. Yeah, I agree. I think it's better to, and this goes for other things as well. I think if you can avoid going to college or university, whatever your field is, you probably should, because it's better if you just get out into the world. It's better just to start developing that independence immediately, I would say. So an art school, as Gifts and I have illustrated, is not a sympathetic environment. And, you know, our experience is probably quite obsolete by now. Mine is nearly 20 years and yours is 10 years, and it's probably a lot worse now.
Well, and even worse is, you know, let's say you, well, it, a lot of the people who go through art school, let's say you don't even have the political issue, you know, let's say that wasn't a problem. Everyone, if you go to the shows at the end of the year, or like at the end of, you know, with all the graduate students have a big show, and you see everyone's work, it's all the same. It all looks identical. And so, you know, who was it? It was Francis Bacon, the painter. He just worked for some like crappy design studio doing like, or like did like advertisements and then, you know, took up painting because he enjoyed it. But, you know, the people who went to art school and still go to art school, their art looks identical. And why is that? It's because, you know, the three or four professors that are, you know, teaching them, you know, they're basically just copying their art style. Or same with film. It's very rare that somebody will break out and do their own thing. I don't even think Quentin Tarantino went to film school.
No,
I don't think he did.
I can't remember. I used to know this stuff. I remember that he was working at a video rental store. That's a sort of famous thing about him. But I think I remember him saying, sort of boasting that, I learned film from watching films.
Yes.
Sounds like the kind of thing he would say.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it's better to learn by doing, for sure. Well, there have been quite a few super chats, so I'll put those to you now.
Sure.
Hold on a second. Let's see. All right. Okay, Jabberwock says, "Woes keep on rocking, my man." Thank you. Gifts. I found you through Endeavor. Would you consider doing more collaborations with other creators in this sphere, like White Art Collective, going on No White Guilt's channel, etc.? Well, what would you say about that?
Yeah, I guess I would.
All right, simple answer. Okay, Darby, the White Shirts video Gifts did with Endeavor was top notch. We need to highlight more creative types in our sphere. There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. And I try to do that with Millennial. Hopefully that works. Caesar himself says, "Gift, keep on doing what you're doing. Red pilling by subtlety and splendid aesthetics. Cheers."
Thank you.
Yeah, that's nice. Black Pigeon Pilled, thank you for this. He says, "Going around the panel, what do you think it'll take for art to be reclaimed from the cynical charlatans who've captured it since Marcel Duchamp's fountain? Managed to get..." Right, okay, so thank you for that. What do you think it will take for art to be reclaimed from the cynical charlatans? Well, Gifts, why don't you take that one first?
I think it's probably... we need to fix our identity problem. It's obviously a philosophical issue and us not being in tune with who we are historically. And, you know, coming back to that, I think people will just make great art if they understand who they are. Since everything has been broken down, you know, and we've kind of been, our identity has kind of been erased, What is there really to make art about, except, you know, to break it down with jargon and you know, silly little things like that, like, you know, clever little things like the urinal. So I think it would really take us, you know, figuring out who we are again as a people and getting in tune with past traditions. And I think that would be the way to get out of that mess. But yeah, we would have to be healthy and happy and have a good perspective of ourselves, because I currently, as it stands, like I said, if you're an artist, you have to be some sort of minority or some sort of oppressed person. And, you know, do you see, like, it's just very tied. Like, you can't really make art unless you have an identity.
Well, this is the whole thing about, you don't have a culture unless it's an oppressed culture. You don't have a culture unless it's some minority thing. It's something exotic. Otherwise, you're just like a default human being. You're sort of blank canvas.
Right.
I think it's completely ridiculous.
It's sick.
And sick. Absolutely. And so in a similar way, well, you don't really have anything to say unless you're oppressed.
Yeah.
I mean, this is terrible. And again, it's a foreign logic to ours. It doesn't belong. We know who came up with it, and we know why they came up with it and what it's intended to do. It's to discredit the majority people in Western societies. It's outrageous. So as for my answer to the question, what do you think it will take for art to be reclaimed from the cynical charlatans? Poverty might do it. Economic recession might do it. Lack of luxury, lack of comfort might do it. I think that a lot of the maladies of our time rely on money, rely on huge amounts of money sloshing around, such that people have the time and luxury to engage in nonsense, but also so that they aren't, so that they don't even realize it's nonsense, because this is as serious as their life gets. Well, if their life is difficult, then they will see drivel for what it is. They'll see a lie for what it is, and a waste of time for what it is. But basically, the short answer to the question is, I think that everything needs to fall apart. I think that society needs to fall apart. Because without that, I don't think that people will take life seriously enough to have an elite who take things seriously. And therefore, you won't have the right things being promoted.
Well said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah. And in the meantime, that doesn't mean that we can't do anything in the meantime, but it means that we're not going to be part of the mainstream, the actual art world as such. And that's a shame. It really is a shame. I mean, it's something
that
took me a long time. Sorry?
Yeah, but it's, you know, the art world is basically falling apart anyhow.
Well, that's
Everything is online. So to be optimistic, that is already falling apart, which is a good thing. Like you were saying, that it does need to fall apart before we can rebuild something.
Yes. I definitely think so. The other thing I would say is there's a danger that while we are underdogs, like actual genuine underdogs, there is a danger that art that we produce will be overly political and propagandistic, and therefore not contemplative, therefore not innocent. And I think that it should be. And I think that's a danger that is there and that we have to be aware of and you know, avoid. I mean, it depends what you're doing. You know, it depends what you're trying to convey. But I think that when art becomes too propagandistic, when it becomes too much just political stuff, then it loses something that probably it needs to have.
Well, I agree with that. But don't you think that you kind of can't not make propaganda?
I know what you mean, but I think that it should be subconscious. I think it should be natural rather than...
You mean it should be good propaganda?
I mean, it should be good art.
Yeah.
Propaganda, good propaganda is something that's, there is no contemplation involved in it. There's no, and not necessarily beauty either. Probably isn't beauty.
Well, I don't know, because it's very, like, the people who are making it really know what they're doing. Even if it's terrible and we can see right through it, we do have to kind of understand and learn what it is that they do and how they do it, because they're basically making an argument through visuals or through meta narratives or whatever. And I do think, you know, you have to understand how they do it to avoid doing that yourself or to combat their arguments. But they are really good at what they do. And I know it seems simple and stupid, but they're really effective.
Yeah. It's a difficult question, you know, because on the one hand, I want to save the world. But on the other hand, I want to make something that's innocent. That is not political. So it's a difficult thing. I'm not sure. I honestly can't give you an answer to how to handle that dichotomy.
Well, I think I might know. What is life? Like, what are we doing here? You know, we're all competing to be alive. And we all do like to sit back and you know, enjoy life for what it is and take the competitiveness out of it. But, you know, to be realistic, you know, we're all in a fight to survive. And so, you know, I think whether you think it's unfortunate or not, that is an element even in art. You know, you can't just navel gaze and just that's an important aspect is to reflect and you know, look at life and all of its beautiful little details. But you also have to remind people of who they are. You have to, you know, have a battle painting. You know, we have battle paintings to commemorate the things that have happened in the past and, you know, the blood, sweat and tears of our ancestors. That's an important thing, you know, to do. And yes, you could say it's propaganda, but really just anybody who's making, trying to make space for themselves in this world, you know, and they're making art about themselves, it's going to be seen as propaganda. So you kind of can't not do it is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think maybe it's something that one shouldn't worry about too much.
Not too much. Like, obviously you don't want to, like, look at the... You don't want to look at the see, it's tough because the people who are in charge right now, they had to be very good and very crafty at first. At first, they had to have cutting edge art, stuff that like would really throw most people for a loop. But at this point, they've kind of atrophied. So now they really don't have to try as hard because they have the microphone kind of thing. So you do not want to copy what they are doing right now. But what they did in the past, you need to understand what they were doing, why it worked, and combat it, or maybe even do some of the things that they were doing. I wouldn't recommend that because we're in pursuit of truth. We don't need to be deceptive. But, you know, with regards to what we talked about earlier, you know, we are dealing with censorship. So you do have to be careful with the way that you talk about things. But that's a different thing.
Yeah, that is. But yeah, lots of good points there. So thank you. Okay, I'll move on. One-eyed fat man says, I would ask gifts about AI art. Reddit has recently been going furious over it as it's seen as not genuine art and banning it from various subreddits.
Oh.
How does she see the future of art with AI presumably only getting way better? It's like the fury of the painters as the photograph was invented.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So I think that the whole purpose, the reason why we make art is to take things, as I was saying, from the ether and bring them, you know, from a formless state into form, or to create a transcendental experience with that world or into that world. I hate to say it, but, you know, AI art is actually probably something that we should all embrace to a certain extent because, you know, like if you wanted to make a film or like an animated bit back in the day, you'd have to have, you know, a lot of money and tons of people. And because of AI, things are getting a lot easier. You know, you and I, we can make a comic. Like, it's so easy with AI to make a comic. So I think for that reason, it should be embraced, because it actually takes the power away from, like, from the studios and the people who have the big budget that we don't have, because they've kicked us out of Hollywood. You know, the dissident right, the right, you know, doesn't even have, didn't, hasn't for the longest time had the ability to be active in culture. So in a way, it kind of deals with that issue, because now it's easier, it's getting easier for us to make content. But as far as skill is concerned, because that's the thing about painting, is that the reason why people don't like AI paintings is because there's a loss of a human element. I think there will always be an interest that people have in something real and in physical form. So sculptures will probably go up in value. People will like sculpture even more than ever. But also paintings too, to a certain extent. There's a book by Robert Hughes. He's an art critic, and he's definitely a hero of mine in the art world. He has a book, I forget the title of it, but it's to do with, it's kind of like the Olympics, like painting or sculpting and humans doing things themselves is kind of like going to the Olympics. So we, you know, with postmodernism, the argument was, well, it's just a painting, or what does it matter? You know, the idea is what matters, not the skill. So I guess what I'm saying is, with postmodernism, we've already had this problem with regards to whether or not we appreciate skill in art. So AI kind of doesn't really, I mean, it's kind of just making the postmodernist argument that they were making. But I guess what I'm saying is that because anybody can make a painting, you know, a digital painting, I think that people will appreciate the craft, the almost like Olympic nature of being able to do something really technically skilled, and that it be something like physical. So it is kind of sad, the AI stuff, but at the same time, it is a useful tool. That's all that I'm saying. I think it just depends on how you want to look at it.
I would agree. I think that I broadly agree with everything you've said there. I do think it's a real, there's something really sad about AI art. There's something really sad about the idea that human skill won't be relevant anymore, won't be necessary anymore. But there's also the fact that, well, it could still be useful. It could still be useful as a support thing, as something that is integral. It's part of the work, but it's not the whole of it. The other danger with AI art is more sort of, I guess, psychological, that hitherto, one of the things about looking at a work of art is that you're looking at something created by a person. And so everything, the obvious example is a painting. So every brush stroke, every decision, everything, every color, every splash of color, was a decision made by a human being, maybe not consciously, maybe whatever, but still the painting is an expression of a person, of their nature, of their mind, of their thoughts, of their feelings on that day, and everything, whatever. But an AI art obviously isn't. It is that, but only in the most vague and abstracted way, where you say to a, and I just did it today actually for the first time just to see how it works, or last night. You say something like a brief, basically, like a summer's day afternoon field, and it does it. Yeah. So then that puts you in the position of the person who commissions a painting but has really no involvement in actually making it. So we're all going to become that, or indeed the charlatan artist that I talked about earlier, who just get other people to do the thing for them. They don't have any skill. Are we all going to become like that? And so our job then is just to come up with the idea. And it might not always be some clever, clever idea, some wanky idea. It might be something quite nice. But if, is that what the artist of the future is going to be? Just the guy who comes up with the idea and then farms it out either to skilled craftsmen or to AI? That would seem, I have to say, I think that would be a real demotion. What's the word? A diminishing of the role of the artist. If we were just basically telling other people what to do, and there wasn't that graft, there wasn't the blood, sweat and tears, there wasn't the time and effort involved, there wasn't that physical relationship with the created work. I don't know, I just see that as kind of sacred.
That's definitely sacred. And that's definitely something that I feel like will always stick around. You know, people think that we're going to put computer chips in our heads and we'll become more like robots, because it's honestly the same kind of argument. Oh, well, we need an assistance from AI to get better at what we do. And I think that that's fine. It's fine that not putting computer chips in our heads, but that we want to use technology to assist us. But we don't have to go all the way. So yeah, exactly. I don't know why we have to put chips in our heads. Why do we have to be retarded enough to say, yeah, let's put chips in our heads? Or to just say, yeah, I'm fine with AI art just being the only art that there is. I think it's very realistic to think, and this was kind of my point with Robert Hughes' idea that, you know, he likes the idea of the artist as the Olympian. It, you know, painting and the skill aspect of it and everything, and not just the ideas, because the ideas are important, but that's not everything. One thing that's important in art is the value that the art has. That's also a component to it. So I do think that will always factor in, you know, because we've grown up with computers. We've grown up on the internet and it being a novel new thing. But what's the next generation going to think? Like, oh, this is not novel. This is not interesting. I want something real. So I think things that are actually like physically made by human beings, I think that'll always be valuable. I think people are getting way too hyped up and they're like, oh, we're going to be machines now. And machines are going to completely take over. It doesn't have value. It's really very valueless because anybody can make it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Someone also said in the live chat, some movies made by people are devoid of character, depth, and soul.
There you go.
Hacks, formulaic. That's what AI would do. Real artists have nothing to fear. I think it is a good point, because it's ironically true that here we are pontificating about human creativity, but often it, as we said earlier about me being in the media, often human creativity is soulless and it's put to bland usage. So that's true. You know, is it like Marvel superhero films? Would they be any worse if they were made by AI? I don't think so. If anything, it would be better, because at least then you wouldn't say, my God, so much human effort went into making this. You know, yeah. So many skilled people and actually gave their time and their skill to make this piece of shit. At least you could say, well, it was just AI.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I actually noticed that too. That's a really good argument. You know, a lot of the AI art that people will share, they'll say, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. Look at what the AI can do. And I look at it and I'm thinking to myself, this isn't that good. There's some guy with a YouTube channel that's like painting like anime girls, but like, you know, it's like soft brush and it looks very like polished anyhow. And so, yeah. So what the AI is doing that? What's the big deal? It's, you know, I suppose it could get worse, but the idea here is definitely the formulaic aspect. And like you were kind of saying, and they were saying, NPCs are making art right now, or things are being filtered so much to the point where it becomes like very formulaic. So what's the difference between it and a computer? Like what it generates? I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And the other side of it is I could imagine AI being integrated into the work of a true artist. I don't think that's an impossibility. I don't think it's even a contradiction in terms. I could imagine it being a useful tool in the same way that all tools are useful, hopefully.
Yeah.
I could imagine it being a useful part of the process. So I don't think that's necessarily a contradiction. So yeah, it could have a role there. But I do think the concept of art is something that needs to be protected as an expression of a unique human soul, unique human mind. That is something that, I mean, for God's sake, you know, it has to matter. If that doesn't matter to us, if we allow that concept to fall away, then, you know, what are we doing? What are we?
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is from Black Pigeon Pilled. And he says, following on from my earlier question, which was about what will it take to reclaim art from the charlatans, what does Gifts think about art theory? Is art simply art by itself, or does it have to adhere to certain principles, the good, the beautiful, and the true, etc.? So what do you think about art theory?
Well, I don't know exactly what he's talking about, art theory. I guess I understand the general concepts of art theory, you know, theories in art. I would say that art is a form of communication. And the best type of art is the one that gives you that transcendental experience where you're taking something from the ether and it becomes, you know, comes into form, like I mentioned. But, you know, I think it's probably, obviously the pursuit of truth is the most important thing. And so if you're communicating, for me, it's the truth. That's the thing that I'm aiming towards. And so obviously art that pursues the truth is the most important thing. And that should be the aim. And that's why nobody likes propaganda. You know, you can tell that it's fake and that, you know, it's trying to persuade you and it's not really like taking you anywhere real and genuine. So I forget exactly what the question was.
The other thing about propaganda is that it's not coming from a place of innocent inquiry. It's coming from a place of conscious, deliberate persuasion. It's trying to persuade. Mm-hmm. So it's not seeing the world as it is. It's painting the world as it believes it should be. And, you know, so it's not the same thing at all. The question was about art theory. Does it have a place? And he mentions certain principles, the good, the beautiful, and the true. I think you've addressed that. Is there anything else you'd want to say about it?
It definitely, I guess I kind of answered it. I would say it does, that those principles are important. And really, the guiding thing is that you're communicating the truth. That just goes without saying. You know, you want the art to be genuine and all the other things, you know, that are in the Western tradition, you know, usually follow that train of thought of you know, beauty is a good guide, as an example. Beauty is a good guide for leading us to the truth. So it's intertwined with the truth, without getting too philosophical or too spiritual, that's in the tradition for a reason. So yeah, those things are important.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you just said. And I think also, art theory does have a place in the same way that film theory has a place. A director, I think, should know about the conventions of the form that have been established, that have been used by his predecessors, because it's what the viewer expects. It's the language that the viewer will be expecting to receive. So if you want the thing to be understood, then you have to know about the language. The lexicon of the medium. I think that's there. And also it helps you to avoid making mistakes, because if you know how to do the thing to some extent, the journey will always be completed by you in your own time. But a good start is to learn about the what is called art theory, the mechanics of it, both physically, like the skills involved, but also the how to do it and what it is you should be doing. You know, this is all stuff that, this is why we should have good art schools. And we used to have good art schools.
I just kind of had to learn it on my own, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think we all do nowadays.
So I, obviously that's the place to start. But, you know, you don't want to get too caught up in theory. You want to kind of start there and then, you know, do. And just constantly make art, and you'll naturally figure out what is true and what's not, what makes sense and what doesn't. So, yeah, the theory is definitely a good place to start.
I think it's useful.
It is.
But you don't, as you say, you don't want to get caught up in it. In the end, the thing you make should be beautiful in and of itself, and should be worthy in and of itself.
Definitely.
Yeah. And finally, Thin Red Line says, I think the works of John Ruskin could help to revitalize true Western art. Well, I mean, John Ruskin, that is an interesting point. And I think that there are probably quite a few artists that could serve as guiding lights here. And I did look at some of his work earlier when I first saw the question, and it's lovely. You know, it's sort of dreamlike. It's got this sketch quality to it. It's lovely. As far as I know, he was more of an art critic than an artist as such. But, are you familiar with John Ruskin's work?
I've heard of him, but I can't think of a piece. Do you have a favorite piece of his that you?
Oh no, I'm not very familiar, so I wouldn't.
Okay, want to see. John Ruskin.
Yes, Ruskin. Okay, I think that's all of the questions. Blunderbuss asks: are there 3D animators in our sphere who are available for hire? Well, there's Censored Anon, who appeared, I think, last night, Yeah, there are. I mean, there definitely are.
There are.
It's difficult. If you're not this sounds arrogant, but if you're a figure in this sphere, then people contact you and you sort of get in touch with people. You're aware of the people. If you're not a figure in this sphere, then you don't really know the people who are also involved in it. But yeah, I mean, I would say contact Censored Anon, and if he can't help you, then he'll probably know people who can help you. So that's what I would say, Blunderbuss. There was also one comment earlier on by Ernest Saves Christmas. Amusing name. Very good point by Gifts. Everything about white people is dealt with in tones of mocking irony, while other ethnic groups are dealt with solemnity and high dignity. That's definitely true, and I think it's just true. I mean, it's supposedly our culture; it's in our societies, and yet it just denigrates us again and again and again. And our culture, and even the idea of us having a culture, is kind of dismissed.
We're not allowed to have one. Which, if you don't have a culture, and I've been told that before by people I know that. Oh, we just don't even have a culture. White people don't have one. That's like that's essentially like saying that you don't have a soul collectively.
Yes.
It's like killing a group of people to say you don't have a culture or it doesn't matter is like saying you don't exist.
Were those urban types who said that to you?
An urban type. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I thought so. I mean. I don't know. It's like the fish being in water. It doesn't know what water is because it's all it. Yeah.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions. So, I think that's it. Okay. Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. So, thank you.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me on. Oh,
great! It was a pleasure. I was looking forward to this one. I wasn't sure how it would go. But it's gone well. So thank you for that. If you hold on a second, I'll just tell you who's on tomorrow. I think I've got this right. There's some glitch with the web page just now, but don't worry, I'll fix it. I think I know exactly what it is. Yes, tomorrow night, I believe it is White Yard first, then Bubba Kate, then Kiwi Off-Gridder, and then The Prudentialist. So that's an interesting lineup, and I'm sure it will be quite fun. All right. Well, gifts ungiven. Thank you for appearing on Millennial 8.
Thank you. And Merry Christmas.
Okay. Merry Christmas to you. And everyone else, I will see you tomorrow. And yeah, I look forward to that. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. T-shirts and mugs and other wondrous gifts are available in the merchandise store. Impress your family, friends, colleagues, and business partners with these incredible items. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.